Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, radio expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. I'm the host of the show, Kevin S. Fox, coming to you from Studio B in Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. Tonight's episode, we finish up our summer reading series, the third volume, volume number three, and we've been reading Home Geography, a primer, if you will, for geographical thinking, a book written by C.C. Long that takes a look at how to think geographically and the geography of the world in which we live. It's been a popular homeschooling resource for many generations. Of course, geography might be divided into the geography of the home and maybe the geography of the world at large. A knowledge of the home must be obtained by direct observation of the rest of the world. Through that imagination assisted by the information, you know, we can picture then the world at large. Ideas that we get from direct observation help form a basis for imagining those things, which are distant and unknown. The first job for us, then, is geographical instruction, to study a small part of the Earth's surface, the one that's right here, right next to us. You know, all around we have examples of lakes and rivers, uplands, lowlands, slopes and valleys. These forms might actually be observed by the pupil, the student, mental images or pictures obtained in order that he or she be enabled to build up in his or her mind other mental pictures of similar unseen forms. The hill that he or she climbs each day may, by an appeal to their imagination, represent to them the lofty Andes or the Alps. From the meadow or the bit of level land near the door may be developed a notion of plain and prairie. The little stream that flows past the schoolhouse door, or even one formed by the sudden shower, may speak to him or her of the Mississippi, the Amazon, or the Rhine. Similarly, the idea of sea or ocean may be deduced from that of pond or lake. Thus, after the pupil has acquired elementary ideas by actual perception, the imagination can use them in constructing, on a larger scale, mental pictures of similar objects outside the bounds of his or her own experience and observation. Tonight, we continue with our reading and pick up where we left off. Lesson 33, Forest Trees. In your walks, what things please you the most? Is it not the trees? Trees are very useful to us, and we ought to be very grateful for them. Name some trees along the streets and in the parks. Are they useful to us, especially on a hot day? Why? Then what kind of trees do we call them? Which of these are the first to put on their green dresses in the spring? Which are the brightest in autumn? Name some trees that grow in the woods. Name a tree whose wood is dark, a tree whose wood is light, a tree whose wood is hard, a tree whose wood is soft. Name some trees that are valued for the color and hardness or the beautiful grain of their wood. What kind of wood are the desks made of, the teacher's table? What kinds of wood are used in making chairs, tables, pianos, windows, floors? If we wish to make a carriage, omnibus, cart, or wagon, which wood should we use? And why? From which trees do we get lumber for building? Can you name a wood which is very hard and tough and is used in building ships? What do we call many trees together like these? What is Arbor Day? Why need we plant trees? What do we plant when we plant the tree? We plant the houses for you and me. We plant the rafters, the shingles, the floors. We plant the studding, the lathes, the doors, the beams and siding, all parts that be. We plant the house when we plant the tree. What do we plant when we plant the tree? a thousand things that we daily see. We plant the spire that out-towers the crag. We plant the staff for our country's flag. We plant the shade for the hot sun free. We plant all these when we plant the tree. There are such trees much larger than any we find growing here. I'm sure you must have heard of the great trees of California. Some of them are 100 feet around and nearly 400 feet high, twice as high as a very tall steeple. In one of these trees, if hollowed out, a large family might live. In your rambles in the woods, notice and examine the trees which you see. Learn to know the trees so that you can call them by their proper names. Draw and paint some of the objects noticed as grains, vegetables, trees, etc. You will enjoy this very much, and it will help you to see these things better. Lesson 34, Flowers. A flower is a weak and tiny thing, but there are many flowers, and by helping together, they cover the earth with beauty and fill the air with sweetness. They seem to have been made to give us pleasure. It will be easy and useful to learn something about the flowers that grow where you live. How many flowers can you mention by name? Which do you know at sight? Where would you go to find them? Would you find them all growing in the same place, which can live only in wet places? Which thrive best where there is but little moisture? If we take a walk in the fields in the early spring, which flowers shall we be likely to see? Which later? Which color are they? Which are fragrant? Which most beautiful? Which would you like for your flower vase? Which would you like to plant and care for in a box of earth or a garden bed? Can you find and name the parts of a plant, root, stem, leaves, bud, flower? Learn the uses of each part. Here are some pretty verses on spring and the flowers. Perhaps you will commit them to memory. In the snowing and the blowing, in the cruel sleet, little flowers begin their growing far beneath our feet. Softly taps the spring and cheerly, darlings, are you there? Till they answer, we are nearly, nearly ready, dear. Where is winter with his snowing? Tell us, spring, they say. Then she answers, he is going, going on his way. Poor old winter does not love you, but his time is past. Soon my birds shall sing above you, set you free at last. Lesson 35. What is necessary to make plants grow? Plants do not grow in winter. Can you tell why? Plants do not grow in hot places called deserts. Can you think of any reason for this? What two things are necessary to make plants grow? At what time of the year can they get these? If a country has a great deal of heat and rain, what can we be sure of about its trees and grass and flowers? There are places that have rain enough, but very little heat. How do you suppose the trees grow there? You may get information about plants and things by seeing for yourself, by asking others, and by reading books. Write the names of some grains that we use for food, of some vegetables that we use for food, of two plants from which clothing is made, of woods used in making furniture, and of woods used in building our houses. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, where each month we venture into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Lesson 36, Summer Rain. O gentle, gentle summer rain, let not the silver lily pine, the drooping lily pine in vain, to feel that dewy touch of thine, to drink thy freshness once again, O gentle, gentle summer rain. In heat the landscape quivering lies, the cattle pant beneath the tree, through parching air and purple skies, the earth looks up in vain for thee. For thee, for thee, it looks in vain, O gentle, gentle summer rain. Come thou and brim the meadow streams, and soften all the hills with mist. O falling dew from burning dreams, by thee shall urban flower be kissed, and earth shall bless thee yet again, O gentle, gentle summer rain. Lesson 37, The Parts of Animals. Animals which live in or near people's houses are tame are domestic animals. Others are wild. What animals are found where you live? Which are domestic? Which wild? Which of these animals feed upon grass, grains, fruits, flesh? You know what sharp claws a cat can put out when it pleases. What use does the cat make of its claws? How does a cat paw different from a dog's? How does a dog seize its prey? Compare a duck's bill with an owl's. What use does the duck make of its broad, flat bill, the owl of its sharp, hooked bill? How do the bills of the hen and the duck differ? Would a bill fitted for pecking be as useful to the duck as its own bill? Can you draw a picture of a duck's foot and a hen's foot? For what does each use its feet? Would broad web feet be as useful to the hen as slender toes? What kind of feet has the sheep? For what are its feet only used? Could a sheep use feet like those of a cat or a hen? You see, each animal has parts well fitted for the life it leads. Lesson 38, The Covering of Animals. Name two animals covered with fur, two covered with hair, two covered with feathers. What do we call the covering of a sheep, of a pig? Of what use is hair to animals? What covering has an oyster, a lobster, a turtle? Of what use is it to them? The duck's feathers are covered with an oily coating, which keeps them from getting wet. Are the feathers of the hen so covered? Why? Suppose a squirrel's covering were like that of a turtle's, what would result? What would result if a bird had scales instead of feathers? You see that each animal has that covering which suits its habits best. Lesson 39, Uses of Animals. What domestic animals are used for food? What wild animals are used for food? From what animals do we get beef, pork, mutton, veal? What birds and fowls are used for food? What fishes? From what animal do we get wool? How is wool taken from the sheep? What articles of dress are made of wool? Name the animals whose skins are used to make leather. How is leather prepared? Did you ever see a tannery? What do they do there? From what animals do we get furs? What is silk? Silk is made by little worms called silkworms. When the worm is fully grown, it spins round itself a small ball of silk called a cocoon. If this cocoon were left to itself, the worm would change to a moth, and the moth would eat its way out of this little house. But this, of course, would cut the little threads and spoil the silk. As soon, therefore, as the cocoon is made, it is put into hot water to kill the worm. In this way, the silk is saved. Almost every part of the cow is made use of. For what is the flesh used? What use is made of the hoofs, horns, hair? What is done with the skin? What other uses has the cow? What animal shows the most affection for his master? Mention some kinds of dogs. You may have seen a dog called a Saint Bernard. He is large, with long curly hair. In the Alps mountains, where traveling is dangerous, the Saint Bernard dogs have saved many lives. Who used their dogs? As we use horses to draw their sledges. Which is the most useful animal to man? Draw and paint some of the animals spoken of in the lesson, and then write the names of animals useful for food, of animals which work for man, of animals useful to us for clothing, and of birds and fowls used for food. Lesson 40, The Signs of the Seasons. What does it mean when the bluebird comes and builds its nest, singing sweet and clear? When violets peep among blades of grass, there are the signs that spring is here. What does it mean when berries are ripe, when butterflies flit and honeybees hum, when cattle stand under the shady trees? These are the signs that summer has come. What does it mean when the crickets chirp and away to the south the robins steer, when apples are falling and leaves grow brown? These are the signs that autumn is here. What does it mean when days are short, when leaves are gone and brooks are dumb, when fields are white with drifted snow? These are the signs that winter has come. You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, radio expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check out the website at www.geographicalimaginations.org. Do you have an idea for an episode or want to give some feedback? Go to the comments section on the website or to the blog and enter into the conversation. Now let's get back to our expedition. Lesson 41, Things Found in the Earth. The earth contains many things that are of great value to us. These we must find and dig out. The coal we burn in our grates to warm us, iron from which so many useful things are made, gold, silver, tin, lead, and copper, all come out of the earth. But these are not the only valuable things hidden away in the earth. From salt wells, we get a great deal of the salt used on our tables. From oil wells is obtained the oil we use in our lamps to give us light. Diamonds, which sparkle so beautifully, and the stone we use in building, are also taken from the earth. Coal, iron, gold, silver, lead, tin, copper, mercury, and salt are also called minerals. The opening dug in the earth from which minerals, except stone, are taken is called a mine. One of the most useful of minerals is coal. Do you ever stop to think how much hard work coal does for us? It grinds our wheat, it weaves our cloth, it carries us by the sea and by land over the earth. Hardly any labor can be done without coal. You have noticed that some coal burns with a great deal of flame and smoke. That is called soft or bituminous coal. That hard, clean-looking coal, which burns with little blaze, yet gives out such great heat, is anthracite coal. Coal has many uses. Mention all you can think of. From which kind is gas obtained? Hard or soft coal? What is coal? Someday you'll be able to understand how coal was made and how it got deep down into the earth. What article used with food is found in mines? Does all salt come out of the mines? How is the salt made that is not found in mines? There are salt mines where men, women, and children live all their lives and never see sun or sky. Many great rooms and galleries with tall pillars to hold up the roof are cut out of the salt. When lighted up with torches, they glitter as if studded with precious stones. It's like a fairy palace. Some minerals are called metals. Iron, gold, silver, copper, tin, and mercury are metals. Iron is the most useful of all metals. Do you ever think what we should do without this hard, strong metal? The following lines tell us some of the uses of iron. Iron vessels cross the ocean. Iron engines give them motion. Iron pipe our gas delivers. Iron bridges span our rivers. Iron horses draw our loads. Iron rails compose our roads. Iron houses, iron walls, iron cannon, iron balls. Iron lightning rods on spires, iron telegraphic wires. Iron hammers, nails, and screws. Iron everything we use. Steel is iron made very hard. Knives, axes, hatches, and other tools are made of steel. Many little things are made of steel. Mention some of them. Which is the most valuable of all metals? Is all the gold made into money? Is money made of pure gold? Why? Name articles of ornament made of gold. Articles of use. Are gold watches, chains, and rings usually made of pure gold? Why? What do you call the man who makes these articles? Silver is the whitest and most lustrous of all the metals. What does lustrous mean? Is iron lustrous? Are silver articles usually made of pure silver? Why? Silver and gold are found among the mountains in the West. Sometimes they are dug out of the ground. Sometimes they are found in rocks, and the rocks must be broken up before they can be taken out. Sometimes men wash down the hills with streams of water in order to get at the silver or gold among the rocks. Gold and silver are called the precious metals because they do not rust and on account of their scarcity. Tin is white and bright, but too soft to make articles which shall be light and strong. Therefore, thin plates of iron are dipped into melted tin. The tin adheres to the iron and makes it bright like tin itself. A thin sheet of iron covered with tin is called tin plate. It's of this that our tin cups, pans, and kitchen utensils are made. A tin cup is really made of iron. Lead is a very heavy metal. It's so soft that it can be cut with a knife. It's used in making shot and water pipes. Do you know how shot is made? Do you ever see a shot tower? Small shot is made by dropping melted lead through a sieve in rapid motion from the top of a high tower. The drops fall into the vessel of water below. They are next polished and made black and then are ready for sale. You think, I suppose, that the lead pencil with which you write is made of lead. It's not made of lead, but of graphite, which is a kind of coal. Copper is softer than iron, but harder than lead. It will not rust. Cooking vessels are often made of copper. Zinc is another valuable metal and is almost the color of tin. Brass is made by mixing copper and zinc together. Mention some articles made of brass. Write five lines about tin. Write five or more lines about coal. Write what you know of iron, gold, silver, copper, and lead. Lesson 42. More about things found in the earth. We have seen that there are many kinds of metals. There are also many kinds of stone. Those which are strong and do not crumble by exposure are useful for building. The place from which stones are taken for building is called a quarry. The more common stones are granite, sandstone, limestone, marble, and slate. We will first examine a piece of granite. How hard and firm it is. What a beautiful clean surface when polished. Granite is used for steps, for paving streets, and for sidewalk curbings. Are houses ever built of granite? Can you think of other uses of granite? Why is granite used for these purposes? It's easily shaped. It's hard enough to give strength. It is enduring. What does enduring mean? This is a piece of sandstone made of little grains of sand. It will crumble more easily than granite. What does crumble mean? Brownstone used in building is a kind of sandstone. And this is the common gray limestone of which lime used in building is made. The large oven in which lime is burned is called a lime kiln. Did you ever see one? Can you tell how the lime is made? Here are three pieces of marble. This piece is pure white. This is colored. It's marked by many strange forms, as you see in your mantelpieces and tabletops. In this piece, you see many colored spots, mottled, it may be called. Marble is beautiful when polished. In what different ways have you seen marble used? What parts of furniture are sometimes marble? Why is it suitable for this? Is marble ever used for building houses? Do you think it would be good for that purpose? Why? Which do you think is the best of all building stones? Why? Marble and granite are the most beautiful and enduring of all building stones. Chalk is a variety of limestone. Could it be used as a building stone? Is chalk harder or softer than other stone? You need not to be told the name of this dark stone. You could not get along well with it in school without slate. Slate is easily split into thin plates and has a smooth, firm surface. Slate is used to write on. It's used in house building. What part of a house is sometimes slate? Think of other uses. Why is it useful for these purposes? We must not forget brick in our talks about things that come out of the ground. Brick is not found in the earth, as the metals in stone are found, but it is made of clay, which is itself a part of the ground. Have you ever seen a brickyard? What are some of the uses of bricks? What is the man called who builds houses of bricks? Is glass taken out of a mine or quarry? No. But glass is made from sand, which is also part of the ground. In laying brick or stone, the mason uses mortar. Mortar is made chiefly of lime. Lime is made of stone, which comes out of the ground. If possible, visit mines and quarries. Take careful notice of all you see, and on your return to school, tell what you have learned. You are listening to Geographical Imaginations. Geographical Imaginations is a growing multimedia public geography initiative designed to bring academic and everyday geographical thinking together. We believe everybody is a geographer and a co-maker of spaces. As an inquiry-based project, we ask questions and explore themes through dialogues with different texts and voices. Inevitably, our explorations return to simple yet complex questions, like how does blank inform the way I picture the world in my head? And how does that picture in turn limit or expand my place in the world? The main focus of the project is this hour-long radio essay program or radio essay expedition that's broadcast monthly from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria. In each episode, we make brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. We reflect upon our relationships with the worlds we inhabit and co-create. While many of the episodes deal with local and regional topics, themes are somewhat universal, and our investigations could inform the geographical imaginations of those living anywhere in the world. Now let's get back to our episode. Lesson 43, How People Live and What They Are Doing. Can you think of anything used in building houses that does not come from the earth? Do all people have large, fine houses of brick or stone to live in? What is a tent? A wigwam? Who lives in huts? Do you ever hear of people who live in snow houses? In some places, houses are built of bamboo. Bamboo is a kind of cane that grows in warm countries. What building is now going up in this place? Tell the use of stone, brick, mortar, iron, tin, lead, and glass in building the house? Where and how are they obtained? We could not live without food. We must also have clothes to wear and houses to live in. Besides these, we need schools, books, and churches, which make us wiser and better. Now, if you think a little, you can name many other things which we need to make our homes beautiful. To supply us with all of these things, men must do many different kinds of work. Where does the food we eat come from? We get most of it from plants. Wheat, corn, peas, and beans are seeds of plants. Almost all our bread is made from wheat. Beets, turnips, and radishes are roots of plants. Lettuce and cabbage are the leaves of plants. Apples, peaches, pears, and other fruits grow on plants. All these we use for food. Plants also supply us with material for clothing. Some clothes are made from cotton. Cotton grows in the pod of a plant. Some clothes are made from linen. Linen comes from flax, which is a plant. Hats are made from straw. Straw is the stem or stalk of plants. Now, these plants, which supply us with so much of our food and clothing, do not grow of themselves. The ground must be plowed, the seeds planted, and taken care of while growing. So, outside the city, you may see a great many people at work raising grain, vegetables, and other plants. This occupation we call agriculture, or farming. The people we call farmers. Animals, as well as plants, furnish much of our food. All meat comes from animals. We get milk from cows. From milk we make butter and cheese. Animals also supply us with clothing. Many articles of dress are made of wool. Wool, you know, grows on the sheep. Shoes and kid gloves are made of leather. Leather is made from the hides of cows, sheep, oxen, and goats. But animals could not live and grow if people did not carefully raise them. In the country, you may see flocks of sheep and herds of cows and oxen feeding on the fresh, sweet grass of the pastures. Those animals are called stock. The business of those who raise them is called stock raising. Most farmers raise cows, horses, and other animals. Which land does the farmer use for pasture? What is a pasture? What is a meadow? Grazing means feeding on grass. What animals have you seen grazing? Does a dog graze? A cow? Mountains so rough and rocky are not good for farms and gardens, but many of them contain coal on which millions of people depend for heat and light. In mountains, too, we find iron, which is more useful to us than gold and silver. To get these, thousands of men are at work in places called mines. A mine is like a great cavern. There is neither sun nor sky. Torches and lamps give the only light the miners have to see by. The air is damp and close. I suppose you would not like to work in such a place. Yet great numbers of persons are employed in mining. How is coal taken out of a mine? What are the dangers of coal mining? Try to find answers to these questions for yourself. If necessary, your teacher will help you. In some parts of the country are forests of pine, oak, and other trees. Some of these forests are so large we might travel for days or weeks through them. From trees we get lumber. Lumber is needed for building houses and ships and for furniture. So a great many men are employed in cutting down trees and preparing the wood for use. This is called lumbering. The lumbermen go into the woods in winter and build themselves little huts to live in. All through the winter months, they work in the woods from sunrise to sunset, felling the best trees and cutting them into logs. Then they haul them over the snow-covered ground to the frozen streams and pile them up upon the banks. Here the logs must rest till the snow and ice have melted and the streams are full. Then they are floated down to the great sawmills and cut up into boards, lathes, shingles, and other kinds of lumber. What is a forest? Name some forest trees that grow near your home. The sea yields much that we eat. Some parts abound in codfish, mackerel, and herring. Sardines, the little fish that come in boxes, are also found in the sea. It's the business of thousands of people who live near the ocean to catch fish, salt them, and pack them to send to those who want them for food. Have you ever seen the ocean or eaten any of its fish? Name some fishes found in freshwater. Name some kinds of fishes found in waters near where you live. How may they be caught? Lesson 44. More about what people are doing. In the city or town, we shall find many of the people busy about something else than the occupations we have learned. What do you suppose it is? If you go about the city, you will see large buildings several stories high, with long rows of windows and great smoking chimneys. These are mills or factories, full of machines in motion doing their work, almost like human beings. The people who work in them make almost everything that's needed for our use. Wheat is changed into flour, cotton into thread, fine muslins and pretty calicoes, leather into boots and shoes, iron and steel into plows, stoves, and cutlery, lumber into wagons, carriages, and all kinds of furniture. Other articles which we must not forget are elegant jewelry, all sorts of ornaments for parlors, and beautiful toys which you admire so much. It would take a long time to name a small part of the things made in the busy mills and factories, but think of the articles used in your home, and you may be sure they are manufactured articles. You see, manufacturing gives work to many thousands of persons. What is cutlery? Name some articles of cutlery. We need many things which we do not produce. Other people need things which they do not produce. How can each obtain what he needs? By exchanging one thing for another. This exchange of goods, or buying and selling them for money, gives rise to another occupation called trade or commerce. So many people spend their time buying and selling grain, vegetables, clothing, boots and shoes, or in sending them to places where they are needed. On all the large rivers and lakes, you may see boats going up and down, carrying goods from one part of the country to another. Can you think how goods are carried from place to place where there are no rivers? In countries where few people live, goods are often carried in wagons and on the backs of animals. I wonder how many people have to work to get food and clothing for us. Make a list of all the occupations you can think of. Perhaps you can think of other occupations we have not named. Is dressmaking an occupation? Teaching? Which occupation would you prefer? Why? If you think, perhaps you can tell why men do different kinds of work. What people do to make a living depends very much upon the place they live in. For men, almost always do that kind of work that pays them best for their labor. Those who live where the land is rich and level will raise grain to make flour, or cotton and flax to make clothing. Some people among the mountains work in the mines. Some keep cows for their milk and butter, and sheep for their wool. For the hills and many of the mountainsides afford excellent pasture. People who live near the sea will be apt to catch fish along the coast or engage in trade upon the water. Employments in the city differ widely from those in the country. Here, as we have learned, most people make their living by working in factories or as merchants in buying and selling goods which come from all parts of the world. All people do not live in the same way. Some people have no churches, schools, books, or factories. What do people who live in this way eat? What do they wear? How do they spend their time? Lesson 45, a review lesson. What kind of work is done by the people among whom you live? Are they farmers? How does the farmer make his living? Where does he sell the things which he raises? Where does he buy his sugar and tea and other things which he needs? Do you live in a city? What are the chief occupations of the people? Do they work in shops or mills or factories? Name some mills or factories in or near your city. What articles are made there? What manufactured articles are in the schoolroom, at home? What do you call the men who make these articles? What kinds of goods are sold in the stores? What is a grocery store? A dry goods store? A shoe store? Where do the things in these stores come from? Which were made in your city? Which were brought from other places? What railroads or canals are in the city? Do boats come to the wharves? What do the boats or railroads take away? What do they bring in return? Write the following. Farmers raise, and then write the names of all the things you can think of. Miners dig blank out of the earth. Quarrymen dig blank from the quarries. A shoemaker makes blank. A blacksmith makes blank. Merchants buy and sell blank. So we've come to the end of our summer reading series. This has been very valuable for us. Gives us a little break over the summer, but also I think finding these older texts and bringing them to the airwaves, I don't know, I think it's a bit of a fun project. We considered some other readings as well. Ptolemy, an old ancient geographer, describing the world, so looking at some early written descriptions of the world out there from a Greek geographer. We landed on this, though, The Home Geography by C.C. Long, and thought, in fact, in the introduction, that it basically that it captured, I think, what we're interested in doing on the show, which is challenging our own perceptions about the world, understanding how those perceptions get formed, the near and the far, the home space and the world at large. I think it might be interesting, actually, to listen to that introduction again and walk away with that. So I thank you for listening to this three-part series. Look forward to continuing the Geographical Imagination show from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, as we move forward. Look for us there. See ya. To the teacher, geography may be divided into the geography of the home and the geography of the world at large. A knowledge of the home must be obtained by direct observation of the rest of the world through the imagination assisted by information. Ideas acquired by direct observation form a basis for imagining those things which are distant and unknown. The first work, then, in geographical instruction is to study that small part of the earth's surface lying just at our doors. All around are illustrations of lake and river, upland and lowland, slope and valley. These forms must be actually observed by the pupil, mental pictures obtained, in order that he may be enabled to build up in his mind other mental pictures of similar unseen forms. The hill that he climbs each day may, by an appeal to his imagination, represent to him the lofty Andes or the Alps. From the meadow, or the bit of level land near the door, may be developed a notion of plain and prairie. The little stream that flows past the schoolhouse door, or even one formed by the sudden shower, may speak to him of the Mississippi, the Amazon, or the Rhine. Similarly, the idea of sea or ocean may be deduced from that of pond or lake. Thus, after the pupil has acquired elementary ideas by actual perception, the imagination can use them in constructing, on a larger scale, mental pictures of similar objects outside the bounds of his own experience and observation. To effect this, the teacher should visit with her class places where the simpler geographical features in miniature may be observed. If the school is in the city, pupils may be taken to the parks for this purpose. If out-of-door study be impossible, they may be induced to recall objects which they have seen on their way to school or on short excursions in the neighborhood. In the case of children who have little opportunity for observing nature, a drawing, a photograph, or a model will be helpful in giving them a proper idea of the matter. It must not be forgotten, however, that actual observation by the pupil is necessary to seeing clearly and intelligently. Vegetable and animal life are essential features of the geography of the world, and considerable time should be given to the study of those within the observation of the pupils. Information concerning plants may be gained by outdoor study, also by planting seeds in boxes and having pupils carefully watch their germination and growth. Pupils should be encouraged to make collections of the minerals and rocks of their region. These should be classified and arranged for use, not for show. The lessons about rain, snow, dew, etc. should be given at appropriate times. A wet day will suggest a lesson on rain, a snowy day, a lesson about snow. No attempt should be made at science teaching, so-called. All that should be sought is to get the pupil thoughtfully to observe, and thus to awaken his interest in the world about him. Lessons should be conversational in form, which is always a most pleasing style for children, as it is the most natural. The work of the teacher is to awaken and stimulate interest, not to impart information. The attention of the child should be directed to what lies around him. He must observe and think and express his thoughts. Nor should his observations be confined to the school and school hours. He should be encouraged to obtain his information by his own searching, without guidance, and report the results. The development of clear mental pictures is stimulated by expression. Expression is the test of the pupil's knowledge. Hence, the child should be required to reproduce what he has learned. He may do this by modeling, drawing, and oral and written description. These are placed in the order with which should be followed in the training of children. The inclination of nearly every child left to his own mode of development is to make in some plastic material what he has seen. Trying to fashion the hills and valleys with which he is familiar excites his interests and leads to closer observation. This may be followed by the reproduction in molder sand or in clay of the forms seen in pictures or learned from description. Definitions of the various forms, hill, mountain, valley, island, etc., should be developed as they are molded. The memorizing of definitions should seldom be required and should never be made a test of the pupil's knowledge. Reproduction by the hand should be followed by drawing, whenever this can be done. Drawing teaches the child how to see well. It often enables him to reveal what could not be well expressed in words. He also becomes ready and rapid in the use of the pencil when he has ideas to put on paper. Only reasonable accuracy should be required. Practice in making fine pictures should not be the end sought, but the development of geographical ideas. Finally, pupils should be led to give clear and connected statements of what has been learned. For a language lesson, a written description may be prepared, illustrated by a drawing.